Oh,
it's
it is absolutely it absolutely is more than amazing. It is a marvel in architect of what it is. And of course, it's a mall that basically is supposed to be like an airline terminal where you go in and they have signs to London, to Paris, to Istanbul,
And
and
that's each
basically it's
floor.
ter like yeah, you're a terminal, and it's really big. It's huge, 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 huge.
And if you ever get to
Anyway.
Bangkok, they have the best food mart and the most economical food mart on the top
Oh,
floor by far.
we ate there the other night. It's almost like you're stealing their food. I mean, the average dish is 32 baht. That's the average dish. So whatever you want, and you could order as much as you want, but 32 baht. So let's break it down. 32 baht is like a dollar. That's what it is. So last night, or the night before, I had some duck. I had some wide Asian noodles. I had a Thai cucumber salad. Bo had a Thai crab salad, and she had some sort of Thai pork dish as well. And the whole thing came for both of us 220 baht, which is $6. Like ridiculous cheap. And that includes drinks. So yeah, Terminal 21, I recommend it highly, the top floor. But it's also a mall. So they've got a top supermarket, which would be like like an Albertsons or a Vons or a Gelson's or a Whole Foods. You know,
Burgers or
it's a
whatever,
nice market. But anything you think you could buy in a mall would be at the Terminal 21 mall. And by the way, speaking of that, let's welcome everybody. Hi, everybody. This is our 187th meeting, Thinking Out Loud with Friends. We're talking about Bangkok right now, but that doesn't mean that's what we're going to stay on. We talked about the weather before you got here. We talked about musicians. We are talking about whatever pops into our head. So, anybody have anything that there's popped into their head that they'd like to share?
Well, I've had a wonderful week dealing with utility providers blowing up my home. So that's been fun. They decided that it would be nice to send 220 volts down my neutral in my house.
Ouch.
Wow, why did they do that?
It's almost getting legal at this point, but it was windy and something happened on their transformer and boom, every piece of metal in my house was energized. All my
Well,
conduits, everything.
I thought maybe you overpaid the bill and they just wanted to give you your money's worth.
No,
No, not
it's not
quite.
been.
Do you know that guy I was talking about in Miami?
Oh yeah. I contacted him. He said to send it down.
Yeah,
So
he can fix anything, especially old Meijer stuff.
yeah.
I
It
ship
was
stuff
on
home
the
from
bench.
here.
It was plugged in on the bench. And kablooey. Anything any oh, you know, I lost printers. I mean, the total right now is over $11,000 and
Oh, what a
climbing.
bummer. Sorry to hear that. Don't you have surge protectors on your stuff?
Part of that $11,000 are all the UPSs and the surge protectors that gave their lives for the equipment that's connected to it. But also too, it blew my meter across across my backyard. It launched it like a missile.
Wow.
Wow.
So was it 200 volts or 220,000 volts?
I have single phase coming into my house. So normally, in America, it's you get one leg 110, another leg 110, you got a neutral. You get 220 across those two. Well, they put a combination of both legs down my neutral.
Wow.
So my ceiling fans were running at 400 volts. They were about to take off like jet engines. They were, I mean, like propellers. I was running around the house.
Not for very long.
turning them off, and because I could smell the coils melting.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, was that everybody in your neighborhood or just you?
Myself and a person on the other side, the same person, both of us on the same transformer.
Now, how is their responsibility going to shape up to help you get through this tough time?
My insurance company is going after the utility. Utility's saying it's an act of God because it's raining, and the insurance company's going, hello, this is Florida. It rains every day. Come back with a better reason. So they're arguing it out. I just got to pay the deductible.
I got a whole pile.
Microwaves. Oh, yeah.
Sounds, Greg, like you've got high voltage down your house lines. The primary side of it sounds like you got a short from the high voltage of the transformer down your lines.
Yeah, it was a transformer sending voltage down the neutral. It was a fused neutral, is what it's called.
Hmm.
You're being punished for Ron DeSantis.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
We're all being punished for Ron DeSantis. That's it. Even no matter where you are, that's about it. So,
I read one of the banned books.
Oh my God.
And they detected it. It was an e-book. They saw it, it's all over.
So we've gone 187 shows without talking about politics. I can't believe it. And a Christmas show.
So
there you go. So, I mean, it's easy to talk about politics. If we're going to go down that path, we might as well. No. Well, Merry Christmas, everybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's our Christmas show, I guess, because we won't be, Christmas is in a couple of days. It's the 20th right now, where you guys are, the 21st for me. Does anybody have any plans for Christmas? Anybody got anything special they're doing for Christmas? David, what are you doing for Christmas? Vegas now, right?
Well, I'm in Vegas right now. I'll be home tomorrow. And then I'm going to stay home, try to get stuff done. So no Christmas plans, not this year. I'm working on New Year's. That's tough enough. I don't know what I'm doing.
New Year's now. Are you with the Hotel California band? Or
no, they're not working until January 24th. They take December off. So.
Gertie, how many shows you've got for New Year's?
Nothing. Everything we used to do for New Year's went away. We used to do a thing with three stages all at the Experience Music Project or Mopop now. We've been doing a little corporate in there, and I do have a little thing that's an install. It's part of the NHL tournament or something up here, and they're going to put this kind of village outside of Lumen Field where the Seahawks play. Because they're doing it, I don't understand. They've got the brand new Kraken venue, but they're doing this thing in T-Mobile Park, which is where the Mariners play.
Right.
And they're going to walk out of there and go into this weird NHL village thing with all these different restaurants and bars and stuff. And so I'm just putting up a bunch of X-40s and a bunch of UP Juniors and stuff.
Is that going to be on the 1st of January?
We put it out on the 28th. It runs 29th, 30th, and 1st, and then we take it out on the 2nd. But they've got a guy that's some event producer from out of town, like from Colorado or something.
Are they hosting the Winter Classic this year in Seattle?
Yeah.
That must be what
they
it
are.
Is.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they turned the baseball stadium into a hockey rink when they have a brand new hockey rink like 6 miles away.
Oh, yeah. I love those.
That's the thing, though, Kurt. They did it a couple years back in Soldier's Field.
Yeah.
In Chicago, in the middle of the winter. They did that. I mean, it's kind of cool. But then again, too, I wouldn't go to see a hockey game freezing my butt off, in a stadium, especially Chicago Stadium. It'll be okay up there.
They'll have the roof closed, and I'm sure they're rigging for the roof and all that. So I mean, it'll be cool. I'm not doing anything inside. I'm just doing this playback system outside, and they got a guy who's run it and do the cues, and so we'll put it in and then we'll go take it out. So technically I have a gig on New Year's, but I won't be there.
Now, has hockey gotten that big that they could play it in a stadium?
Well, they do that. They do that every year.
Yeah.
Like the biggest one was when I believe it was the Red Wings when they played Toronto at Michigan Stadium in Ann Arbor. But the Winter Classic is a classic. It's the hockey teams. There's hockey teams that play there every year. Yeah. Just so in different places.
You sound like a hockey person.
I liked hockey with the Red Wings.
Oh, okay.
When Stevie was playing, but now he's like a GM over there in Orlando or something now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah.
I remember.
Well, I don't mention the Lightning now here, you know, because I do go to a bunch of Lightning games.
Or is it Orlando? Yeah, it is. That's where
you're. Well, Tampa. Yeah.
Yeah,
we did a job with the Panthers. I believe that they're a hockey team down south in Lauderdale area.
Yeah,
we did a job with the Panthers, which was cool. But you know, when I first started in the business, you know, I was working for the mayor of Los Angeles, and I was doing celebrities for public events and commercials that, you know, for public service announcements. And Jerry Buss had just bought the Kings, and he couldn't get anybody to come to see the Kings. It was before, and he hired me to invite celebrities down to see the Kings play so that we could get more publicity so that people would start coming down. That was before he got Gretzky on the team and all that other stuff. And now, of course, hockey has exploded and it's huge. So, but that was my little contribution to making hockey a staple at the Staples Center, I guess that's where it is.
and during that time, that's when Myrna had season tickets to the Kings.
Yes.
So I used to go all the time.
Did you see that HBO thing, Winning Time?
What was it called?
Winning Time.
Oh, Winning Time. No, about the Lakers.
Yes, it's awesome. Not even like a huge like basketball nut or anything, but it's really great.
Yeah, it's sitting on my TiVo waiting for a year now.
And Winning Time is on what, Netflix? Amazon Prime? What's it on?
Probably Prime, I think.
Yeah, it might have been Amazon Prime.
I did see it.
It's so hard to choose which streaming services that you should have, you know. But basically, what do you guys have? I mean, Wayne, what do you use down in Australia? Do they have Amazon Prime down in Australia? Do they have Netflix down in Australia? What do they have in your neck of the woods?
Well, they definitely have Netflix, but I can't tell you any information on that because I don't have any of them.
How do you watch movies? really? That's how you do it? Unbelievable.
I don't watch movies very often.
I understand. The dogs are bowing.
Whose woofer was that?
I don't know.
That's us.
That's you, Dave.
Well, I'm glad they're adding to the show. You know, that's about
they're very talkative.
Now, David, you have how many TiVos now?
I'm waiting for the dog to stop. I have. I have five TiVos, and we have Prime, Netflix, Hulu, Disney Plus, Apple, Peacock. We got them all.
Yeah.
Because my wife is in the business and she's got to watch her clients. So we have them all.
Wow, the dog is really excited. What's going on there? What are you getting, a delivery?
Quite talkative.
I don't know. All of a sudden, he started barking.
Sounds like a beagle.
Well, I would recommend anybody who has Netflix to watch Rebel Moon. It's a new sci-fi thing. A very good colleague of mine, and he did sound for the entire movie. So Dick Hansen, better known in the business as Rabbit. It was Joe Perry's guitar roadie for years. And he also did monitors for Aerosmith. And now he's done so many films over the years. He's quite famous. So definitely if you get a chance, you know, watch Rebel Moon on Netflix. You get Prime if you have Prime Movies, if you have Amazon Prime for shipping. So I have that. I do Max and Paramount, and that's and then I just added Netflix this year, and then I was just gonna say, and then I have HBO TV.
I remember when we all had cable, we were all complaining how expensive cable was. So we went and we started cutting the cords. Now we have so many subscriptions that it's almost the same as the cable cost that used to be.
But you could turn them on and off. That's what's nice. With the cable, you know, you had your package and that was it. You know, if there's something I want to see on Disney Plus, I sign it up for a month and then I'm done. You know, and then maybe 6 to 8 months later, I'll turn on Disney again, or, you know, or I'll turn off this, turn off Paramount for 3 or 4 months, turn it back on when Picard comes back on or something like that, you know.
Yeah, I didn't realize you could do that. I thought it was a 1-year subscription.
Nope. Well, just don't pay the bill and use another credit card.
Well, there is a card out there that I've been telling you about called Revolt. I believe that's what it's called. And basically you create a credit card, a virtual credit card for whatever you want to use, and then you put a limit on it. So when I buy a subscription, like for example, to the New York Times, I put it on the Revolt card and they can't charge anymore. And then I have it shut off when I don't want it anymore. So I just shut off. And of course, use
an
email address. Revolt is really good. I think they're having a special right now too, is that if you turn somebody on to it, you both get $75 or something. I'll look into it. No, if I do, I'll send it to you.
Yep. Shoot me an email on it, Dan, or message me on it. I'm interested in that because I'm tired of rotating credit cards. I just tell, you know,
Revolt is really cool in that respect. You just create a virtual card. And you set the limit on what you want on the virtual card, and you put an expiration date, or you could cancel it at any time.
So, I just, I get to the point where if they're being a pain about it, I just call the bank and said, listen, this is a subscription fraud. I need a new card. You know?
Yeah. Maybe you should use that
this
card
is a lot easier.
Bill.
Huh?
Maybe you should use that card for your power bill.
Yeah, well, the interesting thing about all this power is my power bill is only $15 to $30 a month because, you know, I got a 12-kilowatt solar array on top of my house. Okay, so that ain't no big thing, you know, but you can't totally cut the cord in Florida as far as power is concerned. You know, unless you got a generator, which I don't have.
Well, so, even if you do, they want you hooked to the grid so they could buy the energy for you. It's basically the law that everywhere in the United States, where if you're generating positive energy, that they have to buy it from you.
Yeah, when all this mess happened with my neutral, my transfer switch or my solar panel went, kabam! It said, I don't want any of that. You know, and
at least you saved something.
Here. Yeah.
At least, you know, it's not everything got kablooey. David put in some sort of system at his house that would probably have, if you had it in your house, probably would have survived that as well. Right, Dave?
I don't know. I got a whole house generator and they put in a giant surge protector for the whole house.
Right.
So
now, I don't know how that, but if you have a whole house generator, it's the same thing. You have to have an auto transfer switch,
right?
Because if what that does is it cuts off the power side, so that you're not sending energy back when these guys are trying to fix, you know, wires that are down in water that they may be standing in. You know what I'm saying? So,
well, I definitely have an auto transfer switch.
Whether it's solar or whether it's a generator, whenever they see anything weird going on the, you know, on the utility side, they just, it's a huge magnetic clamp, but it goes clack. And, you know, it just disconnects you.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, the transfer switch, the normal use for it is, of course, when the power goes off, the generator goes on, and it just switches over. But I don't know how a whole house surge protector would work with what you have.
No,
it wouldn't.
No, because, I mean, that's the reason why my main breaker didn't blow, because the voltage was coming in on the neutral.
Right.
So.
Well, it's a good thing you didn't have a concert going on at the time at your house. You would have had to refund the ticket prices.
It was 6 o'clock in the morning. You know, if I knew it was going to happen, I probably could have made a whole bunch of money on YouTube views by showing what my meter flying across the across my backyard. And, you know, no.
Was it loud? Anyway. Greg, was it loud when it went?
Yeah. I mean, and trust me,
woke
I'm
you, hey?
Up at 6 a.m. So, and you know, the dog here would just jump. Yeah, he jumped about a foot and a half. And I said, what the? You know, starts with an F and it's not Frank. And then all hell was breaking loose in the house. So the one bad thing about LED lights, they blow more than fluorescent lights do or incandescent lights do. They don't like over voltage or weird voltage. They just go, I'm out of here.
Oh, that's crazy, man. That's crazy.
So, overmotivated electrons. Yeah. They'll run amok. If you let them run amok, they will run amok.
Well,
so, you know, I'm really glad I didn't turn on a light switch and touch the faucet, you know, because I wouldn't
be. It just sounds like high voltage. It really does sound like high voltage coming through the house. Yeah.
Because everything was electrified that was plugged in.
Could say, Greg, it's a good thing you weren't using your vibrator at the time. That's all I could say. You're lucky. You know, that would have been a YouTube video we could have watched, you know. But speaking of that, has anybody seen the Netflix show Obliterated? It is hilarious. It's you have to suspend your disbelief system. But it's a 6-episode miniseries on Netflix, and I highly recommend it for a good. It's a lot of laughs. You have to suspend your disbelief system because it's impossible for it to be real. But if you do that, it's funny. So that's something that I would recommend. By the way, did you hear that Barbie did over $1 billion in the box office?
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
And now they're not. You can't buy Barbie. You can only rent it online for 48 hours. You can't buy a Barbie DVD. They're just going to rent the bullcrap out of it.
Well, yeah. Soon it'll go. It'll be streaming soon enough.
It is streaming, but for, you know, you pay $39 for 2 days. It's like. You know, the Eras tour, same thing, you know. Hmm.
Speaking of which, she's done over $1 billion on that tour as well. Beyonce has done almost 600 million. Springsteen's done almost 400 million. Coldplay, I can't believe it, but Coldplay has done 325 million last year. Harry Styles only did 290 million. Morgan Wallace, the country star, 285 million. Ed Sheeran, 268 million. Pink, Who would have thought? Pink's tour last year did $231 million compared to The Weeknd, $221 million, and Drake about $41 million. Or I think $41 million. Yeah, $41 million. I mean, well, that's
Coldplay
amazing.
Is huge in Europe, Jan, and Scandinavia. I mean, they're, Coldplay is huge.
I wouldn't have, you know, I don't get it. They have like one or two good songs, and yet they seem to be, you know, I mean, like they are really racking in the dough. I mean, yeah, thinking about that they did, you know, $325 million this year on their tour. Wow. That's a lot of money.
Well, I think you should add in Barry Manilow on that list, you know.
I don't see him on the list, but maybe he's just, you know, bubbling under the top 10. Hey, Ken Newman's in the room, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, Jan, who were you talking about that you don't think was very good?
No, I didn't say. I just didn't think that they had many songs that would warrant that kind of money, and that was Coldplay.
Oh, they do stadiums. They are huge, man. Yeah, they are freaking huge. Do you follow them at all? I look at them on Instagram, and they play huge shows with sellout crowds.
And yeah, what's really cool about how they do it, they put up a like 200 yard by 200 yard spring loaded dance floor, and that generates energy. And they go ahead and take that energy, and they have transfer switch, and it pays for the lights. And then also they have, you pay extra. They have 200 like Peloton bikes that are hooked up to generators, and so you watch the show and you're pedaling while watching the show.
Maybe that's what happened to your house. Was Coldplay playing in Florida that day?
Somebody was, yeah.
Some guy got the
camera. Oh my gosh, that's insane. Do they do that everywhere they go, Greg?
They have been.
They did it here.
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, and they have electric semis. They're not Teslas. I think they're Volvos.
Volvo makes an electric semi, really?
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
Yeah, Volvo
does
make an electric semi.
Well, that is, so what number are they on the top grossing tours?
Dan, what number are they?
Hold on. I just deleted it, but give me a second and I will put it back and see if I could. I don't know.
I think they were like 320.
Yeah, I think 325 million. Let me see if I can get it.
It was Taylor.
Tina,
Beyonce,
you have it still in the notes.
Springfield.
Yes.
And
what do you need?
The tours. What position was Coldplay in the
number four overall
scope?
Number four.
Wow, that's top amazing. Grossing. So it was Taylor Swift, Beyonce. What was after that?
Bruce Springsteen.
Wow, how about that? Well, you know, it's too bad. You know, all those bands, they have to divide it up amongst the bands. You know, Taylor, it's just Taylor.
Yeah.
Well, she's giving it away like there's no tomorrow, man.
Good for her. That's amazing. Good for her.
I mean, everywhere she goes, she picks some charities and gives away millions and millions of dollars to the charities.
But think about this, guys. All of those top five were Claire Global.
That's scary.
That's yeah. So how much money does that mean Claire was making of that?
Ooh.
You can't count that high.
Nice. Well, for what it's worth, Taylor Swift used to be an 8-day account, right? And it became their account because they got. What about the other ones?
They're going to divide it up, you know? When I'm saying, oh, that was 8-day, but, you know, 8-day's got to, you know, pay the piper, so to say.
Well, here's an interesting thing. About money and bringing back in the sphere, because if you could see the logo this week, it's Santa Claus going down the chimney of the sphere. But basically, I hear they're losing a ton of money every day. They're losing money at the sphere. And Bono generated 109, almost 110 million through their first 17 shows. But the Sphere is definitely losing money, and I don't see how they're going to be able to survive over a period of time.
But their quarterly report showed their quarterly report showed a operating profit, but not overall profit. I mean, you know, you still got a $2 billion expense hanging over your head, but
yeah,
operating profit, they made money.
No, they lost money. They're losing money. They're just their power bill alone.
After their CFO left, though.
I heard that they're losing money. Matter of fact, I spoke to somebody who very intricate into the Sphere organization and told me they're losing money hand over fist. But, you know, it's, you know, hey, do your own research. Everything you hear today is an opinion, so do your own research. But listen to this. The 360-foot Sphere interior dome is 160,000 square feet, 16K video screen. Wow. 160,000 square foot, 16K video screen. That's the audio designed by the German firm Holoplot, uses state-of-the-art beamforming and processing that assures every listening gets an ideal experience. It's also so precise, it requires engineers to input the ambient temperature and humidity of the Sphere for every show. And that's what Kenny was so talking about, is that they have to keep the temperature at a constant level inside.
Well, that I had heard that was relative to, I mean, that may be true for the Holoplot, but I think I heard it was relative to the just the simple expansion of the building, and so that it wouldn't damage any of the LED, you know, elements.
Yeah, well, I would bet that would be the thing. You know, sitting out in the Las Vegas heat, it could get up to 120 degrees easily, baking on those tiles.
Right. Look at what's going past Greg's house. It's like a fire truck all done up in Christmas lights. That's funny.
They're on their way to you, Greg. Take care of you.
Is that a high speed fire truck?
Yeah, very high speed. Yeah.
You know, there's a study, speaking of, you know, cars, there's a study that they just did, which is kind of interesting. Okay. And because you've always heard that if you want to be impressive with people, you have a fancy car, you know, is what they say. So owning an expensive car does make you more attractive. Premium car ownership not only seems to make you more attractive to the opposite sex, it also makes the owner themselves believe that they're more attractive and socially superior, said a Federal University of Rio Grande Norte researcher. So basically, yeah. So if you got a nice car, you feel better about yourself and you're more attractive. What do you know? Who would have thought?
Sorry about the interruption.
My imagination.
And that's news?
Yeah.
There's no news. No news is good news. That's all I can say.
I think that's very evident in California, especially where you are your car.
Yeah. Absolutely. California is really, you know, it's amazing how your identity can be shaped by the car you drive, how superficial that is. But it's true.
That's California for you, or at least Southern California anyway.
You know.
So what's the top promotional car then at the moment?
You mean the one that's the most common?
Yeah, the most exuberant.
Well, I think Tesla, everybody has Teslas everywhere. And, you know. But there's fancy cars. If you go to Beverly Hills, you see all the fancy cars, right? Ferraris and Rolls Royces and McLarens, all those things.
So, which would be the top one of exuberance? McLaren.
I've always been a big fan of the Rolls Royce. You know, some of the Rolls Royces really can get up there in value, and they're just really cool, especially the convertible Rolls Royces.
Have you ever driven one?
Never. I've never driven a Rolls Royce.
My friend Daniel leased one for a little while just to see what it was like, because he was there was you know, there's the take over my lease kind of program. So he right. was able to. There you go. That's great, Kurt. AMC Pacer. So
yeah.
Oh, Gremlin. Sorry. So Gremlin. Sorry. Didn't mean to insult your Gremlin. And that's what, a Rolls Royce? Is that a Rolls Royce there, Wayne?
Yes, it is. Yeah, it's a little. That's a convertible Rolls Royce.
Oh, yeah.
That's a Corniche.
Yes.
Well,
that's about as close as I'll get to a Rolls Royce.
And Bentleys, those are the cars that you want to ride in the back seat. Somebody else drives.
It's like riding in your living room.
I got to go. Well, bye, everybody.
Bye, David. Happy
David. Christmas, David.
And happy Hanukkah. Merry Christmas. Talk to you soon.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Thanks for sharing.
I got a 54 Austin Healey in the garage that needs to get rebuilt.
Wow. Nice. Wow,
that's a nice car.
1954. Is it an Austin Healey Sprite?
No, it's a B4 or something.
Wow. Okay. I'm not sure I know what that
is.
It
doesn't have the bug eye lights. It's more classic looking.
Wow.
My dad bought it from a guy that was a vice president at Boeing, and it was his summer driver car to work, you know, back in the early 70s. When I was a little kid, I could ride in it. It was so low that my dad, he would smoke a cigar sometimes, and he could lean over and crush it out on the pavement at the stoplight.
Yeah.
Wow, that's low.
And so I got a second engine. I've got all the little badges and all the hard stuff to get. He just shut it off and was going to rebuild it, and then he never did. So now I've had it for about 10 or 12, 15 years now.
How well, about it's something that you got to be motivated to do that. You got to be motivated.
You know? I'm going to do Aerosmith's Gamble here right after Christmas. And then after that, maybe I'll dive into the car.
Very good.
That's a lot of work.
Well, I got to do something. I kind of want to play golf.
Yeah, well, it's going to take you at least. Go ahead, Ken.
That's funny. That reminds me of a story I heard. So the keyboard player in Matt and Manilow's band bought an old Porsche 911 from the backline guy years ago, probably 20 years ago. He bought it from, and it was old at the time. So he just kept it in nice shape and hardly drove it ever. He was able to sell it recently for enough to buy a brand new Porsche, if that tells you anything.
Wow.
Yeah, they hold their value and increase
in value. And that increased in value a lot.
The guy that owns Telefunken is really into him, Tony. He collects them.
Old How ones. About that?
I wonder, there's especially Josh. During Hi, the Josh. Pandemic.
Hello, Josh.
I guess especially during the pandemic, that would have been the values of those cars must have went really high.
I was just really impressed that he was able to get a brand new Porsche with the money he got from selling an old antique one, you know?
Doing one of up. The biggest mistakes I ever, you know, I regret is I had a Lotus Europa John Player Special.
Wow.
In 1976. I love that car. Black with gold trim. And it was like one of those cars, Kurt, to where literally, you know, you can open up the door, put out your cigarette, you know, right on the pavement. And I sold it, you know, because I was on the road so much, I never drove it. It was sitting in a garage in Ohio. And so I just said, okay, you give me $12,000, it's yours. Now they're worth, you know, six figures.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah.
Who knew? Boy, if your crystal ball had been working, yeah, you would have held on to it, but who knew, right?
Yep. Well, yeah, that's it. You know.
Yeah, so, in those days, you probably could buy a gallon of gas for 35 cents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, you know, then again, too, me on the road in those days and the way things were in those days, it's a good thing that I wasn't driving, you know.
I can't say the same, you know. I thought I was a good driver no matter what, you know. I guess I was. Very few accidents in my life. I've been very fortunate. Although you know, although I've had less than my fair share. The accidents are just not fun, no matter how you look at it. Most of the accidents I've been in were somebody else's fault. You know, so but it's still you're part of the accident. So anyway, what else do you guys want to talk about?
That's what it looks like, Ken.
Oh, that's a bit flashy.
Wow. Oh wow, how about that? Oh well, I hope you. I hope you get a chance to work on that and bring it back to its original glory.
Yeah, I mean, I know a little about car. I rebuilt a couple things, but British cars are different. And there's a tool set for it, apparently called like Whitworth or Wentworth or something like that. It's not metric and it's not standard. It's something else. And if you don't use that specific, those wrenches, then you'll strip the bolts out.
Interesting, but it's some sort of a hex type of thing. Yeah, it's not like
it looks like a regular socket wrench. It's just it's not U.S. standard and it's not metric. It's some interesting dimension.
What is it, imperial?
I don't know. I must be.
I think it is imperial. I've got some Whitworth spanners here, and I've got imperial spanners, and I've got metric spanners. I quite enjoy doing cars up. Well, I've done a few up over the. And my current car is 39 years old, which I was working on this morning, and it dribbled petrol all over me because the bloody petrol pump's leaking, and I need to replace it. But I've done a bit of a temporary repair, and hopefully it'll last for a couple of weeks until I get the pump.
That's impressive. Today you can't, with the new cars today, you can't do it yourself. I mean, I would think with the way they're basically all driving computers, so you really can't.
Not only that, it's drive and replace. You know, there's no turbo rebuilds anymore. You know, you just buy a new turbo, period.
So if I build a big road case, can I ship this thing to you, Wayne, and have you fix it for me?
I don't know. I might take a look. It's hard work rebuilding cars. I've rebuilt two.
It might be cheaper to ship you here.
Probably cheaper than maybe
out there. Oh, man. Wayne in Seattle. I can see him now. Oh, my goodness.
Now, the one thing about rebuilding your cars is your hands stay dirty for weeks afterwards. Weeks after it. You just can't get that grease out of your hands, no matter what you do, under your nails, whatever. It's just your hands just get dirty.
Unless you wear gloves.
Yeah, gloves. But Jan,
Kurt's rebuilt Gambles. So, you know.
But those are clean.
Well, not really. You get inside of that thing and there's some stuff.
There's get some stuff in them.
Down inside of there that you need to be careful about. Especially depending on who owned it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I dislike, Jan? Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead. What do you dislike? I can think of many. Well,
it's not really a dislike, but when you work on cars all day, and I was a fridge mechanic, which is sort of similar but not quite the same. The oil in that was a shocker because it was hydroscopic. So if you got splurted with it, it would soak water. So if you went and had a shower, and you had it in your hair, you'd have to have like five showers before it would all come out because it was hydroscopic. But when you worked on a car or something and you worked on, like even this morning, I wasn't even in the greasy part, you can wash your hands and you can get most of the oil and the grease out and it doesn't come out of under your nails for a few days. But the smell stays in your skin. The oil smell will stay there for a couple of weeks sometimes if you work for a long time on them, and it stays that way. But on the oil thing, on the refrigeration oil, if I've got 2 seconds, I'll tell you a little interesting story. I was going to do many years ago, 20 years ago, I went to change an oil in a little compressor, a commercial one. Anyway, I was nearly finished. You got to seal it off and I changed the oil and with the valves and you have a little 1-inch plug on the side of the compressor. So the apprentices there and I'm looking over the top and when you finish, you've got to purge all the air out of the compressor. So to do that, I would just crack the valve so that a little bit of the pressure would push all the air out of the compressor. This day, I happened to slip with the little spanner and I'm sitting over the 1-inch hole of the compressor. Every single bit of oil came straight out all over me. It's dripping off my glasses and out of my hair, and all the apprentice could do was laugh. And I go, find me the spanner. I want to close the thing down. Oh, Jesus, I stunk of fridge oil for about a bloody week. Hey, it doesn't have much smell, but...
Is that when you came up with that famous line, and what? Quit show business? Was that you? What? No. Quit show business? That's it.
Oh, I'll never forget that, because it was the oil was running off me glasses and my face, and all the apprentice could do was laugh.
Well, all I could say, it's a good thing you don't work for NASA. Otherwise, it would have been really a disaster, you know? I mean, have you guys seen the new pictures of Pluto? I think it's Pluto. I mean, they are capturing so many pictures with this James Webb telescope, which is off the hook amazing. I just saw, you know, they captured a picture of the Milky Way, the heart of where we live, the Milky Way. If you haven't seen these photos, Google photos from James Webb, and you will be amazed at what they have there. Amazed.
You could just end up with Dragnet reruns, though, too.
You could. I would think that's that would be something that you might, you know, because of the Webb telescope, Jack Webb. I get it. Yeah. Yep. Yep. See, I'm slow, but I'm not that slow. That's it.
That was a Jan level comment, I think.
It was.
Yeah. Hey, listen. On that same topic, they just passed legislation to all private space organizations that they got to clean up their junk after their launches, and their dead satellites, because the amount of space junk right now is getting to the point where I don't know whether any of y'all saw the movie WALL-E. It's exponentially increasing, and so they've mandated that commercial space organizations have to clean up their third stages and all their satellites. They have to figure out a way to deorbit all that stuff to where it burns up and it doesn't hurt anybody, or send it to the sun.
So you mean there's lots of satellites out there that are no longer functioning, but they're still orbiting?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. And space things that have fallen out.
You know, I mean, there's bits and pieces of the booster that sent up Sputnik still orbiting the Earth.
Holy shit. Wow. And it's not an endless amount of space, apparently, right?
Well, it is an endless amount of space.
At one point, we're
going to
run out of it.
But it's in that level of atmosphere.
Yeah.
So it's in that level above the planet where which is where the satellites need to go. And the space junk has the potential of destroying the satellites by running into it.
Yeah, I think Mel Brooks actually had a great idea. If anybody's watched Spaceballs, there was, the big vacuum cleaner that was sucking all the air out of Derridia. Well, just put that around the Earth and let it suck up all the space bugs.
It worked in the movies. It should work in real life, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Elon Musk right now has got like how many Starlink satellites up
Thousands.
There? And I was just reading an article about how he is controlling so much of the communication now on the planet that it's scary that a personal company, not a government company, is controlling the communications of the planet.
Hey, pretty amazing. It's Starlink in the Kingdom of Bhutan. So, and it's great because when you're landlocked by the Himalaya and China and India with their lovely infrastructure, and that's a note to any of y'all who've ever done a show in India, you'll know what I'm talking about. So people are going to Starlink left and right, and in this tiny little kingdom in the kingdom, in the Himalayas.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing what he's accomplished with that. You know, it's mind blowing that he has come up with so many good things, and also so many bad things. But I guess that's how it is. You're not judged on your failures, but you're judged on, you know, how many times you fail and keep on going. So there you have it. The other thing is that, you know, we're all looking at all of this artificial intelligence, right? And there was an article that I read right now, which is really pretty amazing, that only 25% of all the artificial intelligence advice given for medical purposes was correct. That means if you Google something, oh, I've got this, or I've got this wrong with me, and these are my symptoms, 75% of the time, you're going to get a wrong diagnosis. So be very careful about that when you Google your health conditions on artificial intelligence. So don't chintz out on going to the doctor. I wonder who put out that article. Let's see.
Hey, amen.
Oh, by doctors. Oh, it was written by doctors. That's right. So who knows if it's accurate or not? Do your own research.
Hey, listen, as a cancer survivor, my doctors tell me what to do, I do it.
Yeah. Period.
You know, I mean, I had relatives that didn't want to, still don't want to talk to me because I got all these different vaccinations and everything like that. I don't care. You know, doctor told me to do it, do it.
Well, if you believe in your doctor and you trust them and they've had some success, there's no reason to deny what they're saying. But sometimes you get different opinions from different doctors, and then you have to make a decision which doctor you want to go with.
Right. Well, put it this way. I've been in the I've been throwing faders since 1972. And I'm 70 years old and I'm still alive.
Yeah. Well, one thing I will say about it, and not specifically about you, Greg, so don't take this personal, but basically psychologists say they can't meet the growing demand for mental health care, you know, right True. Now.
Yeah.
So if, you know, I mean, I think we all need it, especially after what we've all gone through in the last few years, that, you know, mental care is really important. That was one of the reasons why I started this show, is just to, you know, give people a place to go to and express their opinions while they're being locked down. And now it's, you know, continued to go. It's continued to grow. It's continued to evolve. But what I read also in the health magazine right now, that loneliness epidemic right now, I'll read what this says. This is from the Surgeon General. The Surgeon General report found that people were becoming more isolated in the past few decades, but the COVID-19 pandemic exacerbated the problem. Research showed that one in two Americans reported feeling lonely or in isolation. In 2020, Americans spent about 2 minutes a day interacting with friends in person, down from 60 minutes a day almost two decades earlier. Young people aged 15 to 24 were hit particularly hard, reducing their in-person social interactions by 70% in 2020 compared to two previous decades. So I could see that that's happening. And I just want to let you know that we are here for you. And if you need somebody to talk to, well, at least once a week, you have an opportunity to come in and join us. So anybody have anything they want to say about that?
Well, it shows also too how the increased people are going down an internet rabbit hole more and more since the pandemic than they were before. Okay, you're talking about all these conspiracy theories, everything like that, raising to the top. I'm not talking politics, I'm talking crazy things, you know. If you have time on your hand and you don't talk to people, all you do is you just, you know, live on YouTube, live on Facebook, live on, you know, name your social media platform. You know, it's scary.
Yeah, I can see people getting very caught up in that, what you're talking about, Greg, and just living for that. And then, oh my God, they just, their life as it should be goes right down the tubes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, basically what happens is they start to believe in that social media aspect, and it becomes their life and where they get their information and their social circles and all of that. And if, I mean, you read about these young girls that commit suicide over the fact that they get bad social comments on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter.
What I don't understand, maybe you guys know, but like, do you know who Twitch was? He was Ellen DeGeneres' sidekick on her show.
Yeah.
Right? She did a tribute to him recently because it was the anniversary of his death or something, right?
Right.
And what I don't get was that she said just prior to him killing himself, he was as happy as could be. He was involved with everything. He was everything positive. I don't get it. So what happens with these people's brains that they feel like their only thing that they can do is kill themselves? I don't get it.
They don't want to lose the high.
Maybe they have a real mood swing, like that's not controllable. So they have levels of enormous amounts of enjoyment, and then at some points they disappear into a deeper, different sort of thing where they think the only way to fix themselves is to kill themselves. I find that, as you said, can I find that rather, it must be like you can feel bad, but to kill yourself is a different kettle of fish.
Okay, so somebody I know, I mean, I got this very disturbing email from his wife, I guess now his widow, that said I shouldn't say what it said, but it was very disturbing, and he killed himself right in front of her, it sounded like. And I was just like, what drives a person to do that? I can't get it. I mean, I know that when the last time I talked to him, which was a couple of weeks before that, he was kind of cynical about he was an audio guy, you know, he worked local in St. Louis area, and he worked with unions, and he was like, oh, these guys around here, they kill me. And you know, he wasn't very happy about the other workers in the union, and he wasn't very happy about the kind of jobs he would get, but he was still making a living, I guess, and he was still surviving. And he has a daughter that has special needs. I'm not sure what kind, but some kind of special needs his daughter has. And I guess it became all overwhelming, and he killed himself right in front of his wife. What? I just don't get it.
Well, the interesting thing about relationships, and I go back to W.C. Fields when he says, when he was asked why he never got married, and he basically said, I was in love with a beautiful blonde once. She drove me to drink. That's the one thing I'm indebted to her for. Well, you know?
Well, but and to get back to
I can
that,
relate to that.
You know, I did in the Midwest, I did 15 shows with Robin Williams as a crew guy. And, you know, and I've also done, Sam Kennison is kind of expected. but.
Well, Sam Kennison died in a car accident. He didn't kill himself. Robin Williams did commit suicide.
Robin Williams did, though, yeah. And, you know, and I never saw that in anything. He was, you know, he was great to the crew and sit down, you know, he'd just come in and he'd sit down at dinner time with the crew out there, just be cutting up with everybody.
Really? Then, but that's the problem with Robin Williams, that he never shut off. He just never shut off. Every time I was with Robin Williams, and Robin Williams was good friends with Jonathan Winters. And when I was living in Hollywood, we would play tennis at the Oakwood Gardens Apartments in Burbank. And then we'd go to the Honey Bake Ham. And Jonathan Winters lived at that Honey Bake Ham. He loved it. It was a little coffee shop, you know, that they served Honey Bake Ham. And he would just go, and Robin Williams would come in there and visit with him. And when he was there, it became unbearable. after a while, you had to leave because it was just too much. He didn't know when to shut off. But the problem with Robin Williams, what I heard, was that his last movie hadn't done well. He was having a lot of problems. His success was dwindling. And, you know, that I don't know if that's a reason to kill yourself or not. But the one thing I wanted to say is that the one person that really upset me the most, and I can't figure out why he would kill himself, is Anthony Bourdain. Now, this guy seemed to me like he had the best life of anyone imaginable. He had a beautiful girlfriend that he was in love with. He was a food critic. He traveled all over the world. Everything was paid for. He was successful to a point where he could still blend in with people and not have to worry about people saying, okay, I get a selfie with you and that kind of stuff. But still, nonetheless, he killed himself. Yeah. And
it's crazy. I just don't get it. That's what I don't get about. I hear about these suicides and I go, like, what? Who just said it that, you know, it's one thing being depressed and one thing being like you're down and out, but to kill yourself, that's.
Well, there's I think, Jan, you know, because this is being recorded and broadcast, we should say if you feel like that, there are resources in each one of your countries. You know, Google that and give them a call.
Yeah, they do have a crisis helpline for those people that are going through mental crisis.
There's all kinds of different crisis hotlines for each different. I mean, I know there's like we did shows for. Now I can't remember the name of the organization, but it was an organization of, you know, that helped basically gay kids that were having a problem with being gay, and they would be there for them. I can't remember the name of the organization, but anyway, it was fantastic that they were there for these kids that had questions and like were thinking about suicide. They could call and talk to somebody who would make them feel good about life again. But I don't get it. What flips that switch from, wow, I feel really lousy to, oh, I want to kill myself? That's a drastic switch, right?
Yeah, well, there's got to be some sort of thought process running through your mind that you can't solve. It's a dilemma that you can't figure out an answer for. And so basically is you're in such despair that that's the only solution that you can come up with. But it doesn't make any sense to me.
I personally see the thing. I guess the problem I'm having is that I can't picture it, any life situation being so bad that the only solution is to die. And I guess, but I guess that's what happens, right?
I can, and it would be the only consideration I would see in that is that if you've been diagnosed with a chronic disease that is debilitating you. And that, for example, Lou Gehrig's disease could be an example where all of a sudden you no longer have control of your muscle functions and your mind is still alive, but you have no way of expressing who you are as a person. I could see that might be something. Or if you have chronic cancer, whereas the pain is just eating you up alive and you can't survive because of the pain, then I could see that. I mean, we do that for dogs. We do that for dogs. I mean, if we had a dog that was in a lot of pain, we would euthanize the dog. You know what I mean? But
that's
with humans,
different, though.
Not so much.
That's different. You know, then, you know, it's a complex subject. I have a relative who has done, I mean, she's an angel. She's done grief counseling and also suicide counseling. And the people who do that are just incredible in how they can, you know, just put it in a box and then move on to the next person. They're the people that go in after a school shooting or a mass shooting and talk to the kids, you know,
right.
And get sort them out. And there's people out there. You know, even for, you know, family members or friends, just go talk to one of those people and just say, hey, I don't get it. Can you help me figure it out? And they do. So,
I think you should watch comedy. I think that's a great way to cheer yourself up, is to watch comedy. You know, I mean, seriously, I know people like people that who have gotten sick and they've just watched comedy, and laughter is the best medicine. And that might be something that, you know, you would think, but there are plenty of ways. All you got to do is Google suicide prevention, and you will have enough resources to be able to help yourself out of your dilemma. And just remember, you could always reach out to me on Facebook or any of the social media platforms. If you need someone to talk to, I will be there for you. And I'm sure everyone on the panel feels the exact same way, that if you need somebody to talk to,
Jan,
you could reach out to me.
If I may, sorry to interrupt there, but I just got a bit keen to say, you know, I was, like Ken was saying, you know, how you go from I don't understand how it goes from, you know, everyone can feel really bad, like enormously bad at some point in their life. But there is a huge difference between killing yourself but here's an example of something, and I don't know any of these people. It was just an accident that happened a few years ago. So a family's kids went for a walk to get some ice cream and things down at the local shop. On their way home, a drunken driver ran over and killed the lot of them. Now, they were from ages from 4 to 17. You could understand the parents of that grief switching their brain into, you know, can the human brain deal with that amount of grief? That's what I'm, and they're still surviving, but what happens after a while, you know?
Well, it's basically, I'm just going to cut you short here a little bit, because
you're right.
Basically it's something that does happen, and everybody is different, but there is support out there for you if you need it. And with that, I want to thank you for, you know, this has been a very heavy conversation just before Christmas. I don't really want to go down the path of this. You know, just remember. I
wanted to bring this up, saying that, Kurt, we all have been geolocating your Santa decorations this holiday season. Have they stayed in place? For all of you who don't know, last year, violent people came and accosted Santa and I think Rudolph.
Frosty. No, they took Frosty.
They took Frosty.
Inflatable Frosty off of my front yard.
Has he survived this year?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, they probably wanted it for their own yard. They were so enamored.
Oh, I know where it is. The guys got it up across town. No, my daughter found it. I drive by it every day.
Somebody stole my address sign, you know. I bought this really nice address sign that just had the number on it, you know. It said 1821, you know. And the guy across the street stole it from me, you know, around the corner. He came and said, oh, you know, put it on my house.
Before we leave the whole support line thing, one more point. There must be some kind of a helpline or resource for people with a sweater like Josh has.
Yeah.
Oh, well, what's wrong with my sweater? It's a Christmas sweater.
No, it's an ugly Christmas sweater now. Come on. You know?
It's a depressing, ugly Christmas sweater. It's like dark.
Okay. And I got it.
And only thing nice on it is candy canes.
Yeah.
Josh, where are you right now?
I'm at home.
Where's home? What state?
Wisconsin.
Good.
Oh, Lord. No wonder you're depressed.
Yeah, we're depressed because of our Packers.
Doing good. I mean, if the Buccaneers can beat the Packers, you know.
Well, I'm already betting that the Panthers are going to beat the Packers on Sunday. That Carolina's going to win.
Yeah.
Well, there you have it.
To your defense, Josh, I was just going to say, well, you look like you're at a gig, so you're wearing a black, you know, you're wearing black.
I was.
You know.
I was doing a little Christmas concert thing tonight, and I got another one tomorrow.
It looks like
a
Darth Vader sweater, I guess. Is that what it is? Darth Vader.
Darth Vader sweater. Star Wars Darth Vader. And in my front yard, I got a.
And Merry Christmas to you too.
There's a guy that needs the helpline.
Yes.
And I got a baby Yoda in my front yard, inflatable Christmas baby Yoda.
Very nice. Really, really
in
nice.
A manger?
No.
Oh, okay.
I might offend some of my neighbors. I might make some of my neighbors mad.
So did anybody get anything cool for Christmas, or anybody know what they're buying themselves for Christmas? Anybody buying anything some cool?
New glasses.
I bought myself a whole new power toolkit.
Wow, congratulations. That's awesome. What brand did you go with?
I went with Ryobi out of Home Depot. They were having a special up here, so I went
good
with
brand.
Them. Yep. I got about Ryobi tools for like $400.
What's your favorite tool in that Ryobi set of tools?
Right now, it's the multi-purpose tool that they got, the battery-operated multi-purpose tool. I've used that. I'm using that a lot. Just doing work around the house.
So it's a drill type thing?
It's kind of hard to explain. It's got like a little, you can put either a blade on there, you can put a sander on there, you can put whatever you want on there. You can use it for sanding stuff, or you can use it to, like if you got a sand, like I'm using it at an install, I have to cut a little piece of wood away. So instead of taking a Zalazar skill, so I could take this and it'll do the wood cutting for me and a real nice precise.
I see. Very cool.
So, Ken, yep. I was watching some of Barry Manilow's Christmas show.
Yes, you get it there in Australia? That's on again tonight in the U.S., by the way. NBC, check your local listings, because tonight on NBC, you'll see Barry Manilow's, it's called A Very Barry Christmas.
Yes.
And it's a sound by not me, but I did the sound at the show where he performed.
So the ones right I saw were YouTube ones.
The Opry. Night at the Opry on NBC.
Oh, well, it's not that one. It's not that maybe one. It's after that.
But it,
wait, what did you see?
I think I saw live ones because it wasn't the I don't think it was the finished. That was very good. Very good. But gee, he still performs and the band is great. He still performs fantastic. He, for someone that's in their 80s, it's and they had and I did like where they had the piece of footage I saw, which was someone's camera on the telly. So it could have been one piece I saw from YouTube, but some of them were live, and it was all very good. But
I like to say these last few years, if I have as much ambition as he does when I'm his age, I'll be very happy. He's quite an ambitious young man. I mean, inside he must be what, 25, and he's always changing this and doing that and always trying to make something better. It's pretty amazing. The guy is like driven. I don't get it, but good for him.
It just goes to show that he loves what he's doing, and that's really why.
Or something like that. He loves something.
Props to you, Ken, for the live mic that far away. I tell
yes.
you
that mic.
That's a way of life, Greg. That's just a way of life. That's what we do, you know. I get sort of on average one person per show in Vegas coming to me afterwards and saying either they're saying how great the sound was and how did I do it with him holding it so far away, or they say, is he lip syncing because he holds that microphone so far away, you know.
Yeah.
So my question to you, Ken, was and I was watching all that and I've watched it many times and I'm going, that is hard work. Having the mic that far away. I see now that he's got in-ears, so that would assist enormously in game before feedback. But how do you even that out? Do you use a point where the threshold of the compressor is in when the mic's like down here somewhere? Or
well, yeah, unfortunately, compression doesn't come into play very much because I'm always going for whatever the maximum level is that's possible, because he doesn't sing very loudly and he doesn't sing very closely most of the time. Sometimes he's right on it, but the challenge is it would be one thing if he just wanted a little music in the background, but he wants the band to be in the foreground, and it's like constantly a challenge to keep the voice and the music balanced nicely so that you can hear both of them well, and with the voice well on top, so that you hear every little bit of emotion that he's putting into it. It's challenging, but usually I can succeed at the challenge. Like when we did shows at Radio City Music Hall and we had to use the house system, and all they gave me into the house system was a left, right, and subs, I was at a loss because I just turned it up till it wanted to ring, and I said, that's as loud as it's going to get. That level didn't get over the screaming and yelling of the audience very well at all. So I was constantly fighting to get him louder, and it was not happening. Just because they, you know, they have the room well covered with their sound system, and that includes the orchestra pit, which is right in front of the stage, which means it's going to be a little hot right on the stage. And you know, a normal performer with the microphone right up to their mouth singing pretty loudly, you can get that to 95 dB. But if you're singing quietly from 6 inches, 12 inches away, you're not going to get that to 95 dB very easily. You know what I mean? So it's because of the game before feedback issue. So the next time I go in there, if I can, if I get a chance to discuss it with the house guys, I'm going to see if they'll let me bring in my own front fill system. I know they won't let me bring in the main system, but I think the front fills might be where I'm running into most limiting of the game before feedback, you know?
They did front fills for Tony Bennett, so I think you got a good precedent there.
What exactly did they do? What did they do with Tony Bennett?
They did front fills. That's all I heard from, you know. Well, Night Bob was there, and he saw the show, and
because I could call Tom Young, you know, who did the sound for Tony Bennett. I could ask him, but the thing is, they don't typically have front fills. They have the front fill or the front coverage of that area is from the center cluster, which is basically right over the stage.
No, it was down on the sides. It was on the sides.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Well, I'm not sure what the possibilities are, but I'm going to try to work on increasing the game before feedback quotient at Radio City, because we're going there again in April, and I don't want it to be the same as the last time we were there. It was not good.
You know what I thought, Ken? I go ahead. I'm sorry, Kurt.
You have to get them to mute a zone, a downfill zone, or the bottom part of this cluster. Yeah. You know, just turn that.
Yeah, I mean, the house guy Mike was very helpful. Gradually, we did five shows. Over the course of the five shows, I think he was gradually lowering that to try to help me out. But he didn't tell me till after the fifth show. By the way, was that better tonight? I was like, wait a second, you didn't tell me. So I didn't realize I maybe had some more headroom that I didn't have the previous night. And it wasn't like I was, you know, raising my level, hoping that it wouldn't feed back or something. I was just going for what I knew worked. And it was not what it should be, let's put it that way. But that definitely we need to control some zones, and they're not into that necessarily. They use their system as a system, and it covers the room properly, and if the performer is right on the mic and is singing at a reasonable level, I'm sure it works fantastically. But I'm not sure what they do with Broadway type stuff that goes in there when they're using you know,
labs.
Yeah, so that, well, I don't know, they must do something different for that also, right? Because, you know, that's another game before feedback challenge, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, people also, people also embed microphones into clothing. Embed them into like a lapel.
Well, they can embed them into anything, but I think that you just need a clear shot from the mouth to the capture of the capsule of the microphone.
But all I can figure is if they're putting an Omni mic up here or the normal Broadway positions, or I get it if they're using a headset mic, it gets it pretty close. Right. But that's from here to here. In my book is about a 10 to 12 dB difference in level, you know, coming from the source. So if the person is singing out all the time or speaking out all the time, that could be okay. But I'm not sure how they do it with it, you know, if they're soft spoken or not singing very loudly. You know, it's just something that I have to research before I go back there. That's all.
Yeah. What about the lapels? That's what they do in film a lot.
I'm just curious, Kenny, what is the signal path of Barry's mic, including what mic and what capsule are you using?
Well, it's a long story about what kind of microphone we're using, so I'll shorten it up and say I used to use, when I started on the gig in 1992, it was an SM87 on a Vega UHF wireless, and that worked okay. But then one day my friend Harold Blumberg said, hey, try this new microphone that just came out. It's called the Beta 87. Here's a wireless Beta 87. And I used that, and I never gave it back to him because it was so much better than the 87. And the Beta 87 was the mic I used until I stopped working for him in I don't know, 2004 or something, because it was directional enough that it had a decent amount of Game Before feedback. It had that nice, crisp high end that he likes anyway. So I was, it was golden. But then when I came back to work for him in 2012, I said, well, I guess we should use the latest, greatest mic from Shure. What's the latest, greatest? So KSM-9 was the latest, greatest. I said, let's use the KSM-9. And I've regretted it ever since, because if we were using a Beta 87, I would be not as worried about Game Before feedback. So anyway, it's a KSM-9. And the interesting thing about that is that, so his monitor scheme is a little different than the average monitor scheme. The monitor guy controls his monitors, but I send him a mix minus of the show, minus the lead vocal, minus the main piano. And then he puts that mix minus in all the speakers. And then he puts the lead vocal and the main piano in his ears with lots of reverb. And so he gets the vocal and the piano in his ears. He gets everything else in the speakers around him, and his ear monitors are open. That is, he can hear through them because they're not closed ear monitors, they're open ear monitors, right? And his hearing, unfortunately, is, well, we don't know how it is exactly, but it appears that it has deteriorated over the years to the point where he only hears really well what comes through his microphone, because that goes into his ear monitors, and it's a very high-end accentuated signal chain. So anyway, his microphone ends up being his sensor for his hearing aids, if you will, you know, during the show. His in-ear monitors are fed by his microphone, and anything he hears through the microphone, he hears really well. If he doesn't hear it through the microphone, he doesn't hear it that well. So point being that the KSM-9 is, he's used to that, so I'm not about to change it and say, oh, you need to change to a different microphone because it has a better pickup pattern or something that'll give me more Game Before feedback. So the KSM-9, and for the, it's just a very standard signal chain. It's a UHF-R, and that's UHF-R still, because Will, the monitor guy, just doesn't want to change anything if it's not necessary, and UHFR has been fine so far. So it's UHFR, and it just goes into our splitter. The splitter goes into our respective mic preamps. You know, like for me, it goes into the SD rack and then shows up at the console. And then for front of house, I have many devices patched into it so that I can maximize the Game Before feedback, such as I have a Waves, what's it called, the FBX or something? Feedback eliminator thing, you know, it's like a automatic ringer router, I call it, because it rings out, it allows you to ring out the microphone, and it's rung out to the max. I mean, I just have everything notched out. It's stupid, but somehow it just, that sound that it results in works. And then I have it goes into a C6 in Waves also, which is a multiband limiter, so that when he gets on it a little bit, if he's singing loudly or louder than before, it reduces a little bit of the low end, because one thing he doesn't like is low end. He makes it to sound nice and clear all the time. He doesn't care if it has any low end at all. He just wants it to be nice and clear. And then it goes into the processing in the channel, and then it goes to a drummer. What's the drummer compressor, like a 1960 or something like that? Just for the fact that I can reach for that knob and turn him up if I need to. And every once in a while, if he happens to sing on it, it'll maybe compress a wee bit, but it's not really for much compression, like in the true sense of the use of a compressor. And then it comes back into the channel. And then, oh, I should say, and there's also a lake. There's also a channel of a Lake LM44 in there, so that I can EQ it just a little bit more, to have a couple little notch filters in there on the Lake LM44. And then it goes to the vocal bus, which includes the reverb, and that bus also has an LM44 on it, so that I can do a little bit more tuning of that bus to get it a little bit more Game Before feedback. And that's the signal chain.
A couple months ago, you and I were on the same Zoom call about the Apple Studios, how you do with Robert, you know, do this before you go to reverb, and then it's, you know, cut high pass, low pass before reverb, and then, and after reverb. Have you tried that yet?
No, I haven't tried anything different because what I'm doing is apparently working okay. I'm not about to change. Plus, I looked on the Digico console, and I maybe it's there, but I couldn't find a high pass. There wasn't a high pass and low pass on the EQ of the aux
send. Input, yeah, on the send, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, so I didn't see that. So I was like, you know what, I'm fine with what I'm doing. And so and by the way, he's one of those artists that prefers that reverb to sound very artificial, to have that every time he hits an S. I don't know what they call that.
Okay.
Julio used to call it zizz. I want to have lots of zizz. Yeah. So he likes lots of zizz. And if he listens to the recording and doesn't hear zizz, he'll be asking me why not, you know?
Yeah. The other thing is, have you looked at Samuel Edwards capsules they make capsules for Shure's.
Yeah, I'm sure there are lots of really great microphones that would sound a lot better than
KSM-9. Just change the capsule.
Well, change what I'm still going to be different than a KSM-9, right?
Yeah.
So, and that's not in our vocabulary to change the microphone.
All right.
You know, because it's like, it's his tool. It's his, other microphone is going to respond differently, and he's going to, it's going to upset the apple cart. Because the one thing the monitor guy is teetering, well, we're all teetering on the edge of success and failure constantly, because we never know exactly what he's hearing with his impaired hearing range, as well as, you know, he's the one singing. So it's normal that we're not going to hear exactly what he hears. And the sound that he prefers is pretty extraordinary, pretty different than what an average singer would like. So Will just says, I'm just going to give you what I know has worked in the past, and I'm going to continue giving that to you, and you're going to keep liking it. And he does. He continues to love it. So good for him.
Oh, cool. And so the crowds love it. So yeah, congrats to you.
Change is not something we like. In fact, before our last show of the year, which was a few days ago, Will put a little piece of white tape on my board that says, and he wrote on there, change equals bad. That's great. So Will is not into change.
So you're not going to Vegas anytime soon then?
No, February, middle of February sometime, I think we start back up in Vegas. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, listen, I thank you for sharing that with everybody. We are now been way over our scheduled time for zooming to the real world out there in social media. I want to thank everybody and wish everybody a very, very Merry Christmas. We'll be seeing each other before the New Year's, but I just wanted to say thanks so much. Wayne, thank you for the cup of coffee. Really appreciate it. That was very generous of you, more than kind, and I do want to thank you for that. And with that in mind, because we're so late, I just want to say bye to everybody. Just remember, everything you heard today was an opinion, so do your own research, and remember, you make it happen. So everybody can say good night, goodbye, whatever, and then I'm going to sign off. So there you go. Everybody out there in the world, thanks for watching. Remember, you make it happen.
Have a great Merry week. Christmas.
Merry Christmas, and we'll see you again real soon. Bye now. And we are off the air.
So now I can ask my question. A sound tech.